Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 3rd, 2010. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going well. I'm a little sad, though.
Oh, no. When you're sad, I'm sad.
Yeah, I know, and you should be too, because not only did I take out a third mortgage on my house, I also took out a mortgage on the business,
the
publishing LLC, in a desperate attempt to win Peter Eastgate's bracelet. I was able to scrape together between all that $147,495, but someone pipped me at the end.
Wow, I can't believe it fetched that kind of cash. Oh my God, that's a lot of money.
Well, wow. So I mean, I guess the good news is, you know, I can pay off those mortgages now. So I probably should have never told you I did that. But we're not going to have Peter Eastgate's bracelet to put on the cover of the magazine. Sorry, bud.
Oh my God, that's incredible. That's a lot of money, man.
It certainly is. And you know, a lot of the comments people said, I mean, if it wasn't going to UNICEF, you know, charity, then it certainly probably would not have gotten anywhere near there. I bet you TJ's out there trying to find a way to find a little side charity there to get a little bit more out of his bracelets going forward. But, man, you know, I don't know what the over-under would have been when he announced this, but I wasn't thinking $147,500, were you?
No, not even close. I mean, I wasn't even thinking maybe five figures, but not six. Wow, that's incredible. I mean, you know, it's the main event bracelet, so that's kind of cool and whatever, and that's probably why, you know, TJs don't fetch that much, because they're not main event ones, but wow, that's impressive, and now I have to rethink some of my comments from last week, because there's no way Peter Eastgate was going to put up $147,000 probably, so that's pretty cool, man. Like I said, I think it's a great thing he's doing, but I was thinking just donate the money yourself, but yeah, there's no way he's going to get that kind of cheddar, man. That's huge.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, you know, a little residual publicity for the UNICEF organization, too. So, you know, hey, in the end, it's all good. It's his bracelet and, you know, lots of money for the charity. But, you know, I bring it up again because we talked about this a week ago. But there's an interesting story on Poker News Daily about this. And they went around and talked to a couple pros of what they thought. And then they had a very interesting conclusion to the story. So real quick, I just wanted to mention, you know, they talked to Barry Greenstein. And he said, you know, the bracelet does mean something. And he talked about, you know, when you get down to these end and people make these deals, right, you know?
Yeah.
And there's always some guy that says, hey, you can have the bracelet. Give me more of the money. All right. And we saw that at the Florida Million last year, right? The guy was like, I don't want the I don't want it to be the champion. I want the money.
Yeah.
And he said in his entire life, every person that did that, gave up the bracelet, took the money, has regretted it.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember the night we went to Kenneth James' house and Marsha was there?
Yes. Yeah. I was in the massage chair all night. You were having great conversations about poker history, and I was just getting the kinks worked out.
That's exactly it. Marsha and I were talking, and she said that there was a case where she finished second in a World Series event and took more money instead of the bracelet, and had she known what it was going to become, she would never have done it, and she regrets it. So that's another another confirmation that what Barry said is true. She totally regrets it these days, and that's one of the reasons why she was so worried about not getting in the Hall of Fame, because she didn't actually have a bracelet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you think it at the time, you're like, you know, come on, whatever it is, $25,000 or something, the bracelet isn't worth that. But yeah, it's the residual value of it down the road that, that eventually catches up to you. And just the pride factor, too,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, pride. Like, yep, yeah.
Money, you go out and blow it the next day on bottles of Cristal and a bracelet, you know, you have forever. So, and speaking of blowing money on bottles of Cristal, Antonio Esfandari.
That was close. That was pretty close. Try it again.
I've been hitting the Monet. he says he has his bracelet locked away, and he considers it a treasured item, but he also understands that every winner has a different connection to his or her bracelet, so, you know, he's not going to judge if somebody wants to sell it for cash or sell it for charity or, you know, put it on the dog or whatever. I mean, that's their thing to do, and, you know, I guess we probably can all agree on that, right? You know,
yeah,
it's,
yeah,
somebody wants the bracelet, they can do with it what they want.
Yeah, it's their bracelet.
And that's exactly what Joe Seabock said as well, too. Hey, it's their place that they can do what they want with it. And that brings up to the conclusion of the story that I thought was the very most interesting part, is they pointed out that, you know, Oscar winners in Hollywood, they have to agree to sell their trophy back to the Academy for the stunning sum, Chris, of $1 if they decide later to sell it. And if they decline to agree to that, then the Academy holds on to the trophy. So essentially, with the Academy is saying, hey, we own this trophy. If you want to take it home, put it on your mantle, show it off, that's great. It's yours to keep. But if you're going to put it on eBay, we get the first crack for $1.
Oh, my God.
And I guess the thought is that, you know, they don't want to – it tarnishes the Oscar – if you see it on eBay for $50 or in a pawn shop.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. It's just kind of odd. You're not really winning it then. You're renting it like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Well, no. I mean, you won the award. You just don't have the hardware.
The
you don't
hardware
have
to prove it. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's just – well, I mean, it's an interesting point and would be interesting to try to do that with the World Series, but Yeah, I find that hard to go over with the poker players. They're, okay, you've just won the bracelet. Now sign this release saying you have to give up this. And it's all gold and diamonds and everything? Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm going to give that to you for $1.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, they went on the story to talk about it. I mean, should Caesars Entertainment do this now with the World Series of Poker bracelet? Does a company that big with a brand this valuable risk cheapening it by letting everybody just go out and sell their bracelets on the open market? And would they be better served as a company going the Oscar route and you know, putting some kind of requirement on there?
Oh, man. No way. First of all, you know, you're paying to play in these events. And you're paying
true.
For these bracelets. You know, these, you know, friggin' actors, you know, they get paid millions to stand in front of a camera and act. You know what I mean? And then, you know, that, I mean, I totally get the whole Oscar not, you know, degrading their, you know, image or whatever. And that makes sense. It's kind of weird. I mean, you know, I wonder what kind of legal standing they'd have, too, if somebody just sold their Oscar. What kind of a lawsuit? Oh, you know, what do you sue for, $1? You know what I mean? That's kind of weird. But, yeah, I would love to see them try to tell Doyle Brunson that he can't sell one of his 10 bracelets unless he sells it to them for $1. You know what I mean? He'd have some awesome Texas slogan to jam down their throat, I'm sure.
Well, I tell you, the people that are the bracelet winners that are at home going, I think I can make some bank on this. They're going to be the first ones writing letters to Caesar saying, yeah, you know what? I think you should go the Oscar route because, you know, as soon as they do that, you know, they're the grandfathered in, of course, right?
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So those bracelets are already won now, shooting value.
That's true.
The angle I would shoot on this one.
Absolutely. Make mine more rare. Man, it's like going out and finding the artist that made this great sculpture and killing him just to double the value of the one you just bought.
It's like George Costanza.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you make a very good point, my partner, about the fact that you're paying to get into this this tournament,
yeah.
And it's different than an Oscar where you're getting paid to be in a movie, and then it's an award given to you. I mean, this is
yeah.
a competition.
Yeah, exactly, and it's the Academy's award giving you. You know, what I mean, so they can set their own rules, you know, if they want. But it's your money, and you know, your tournament essentially. and Caesar's just hosting it. You know, they're not. Yeah, there's just no way. There's no way that would ever fly, ever. You know, ever. That'd be hilarious. They just start a rival series, that's all, and create another one, and everyone would play in that one. So that's just crazy. But that's good news,
people
I don't know. I'd
like to see that.
Yeah, that would be cool. I had heard of rumors, too, that, like, Eric Lindgren and some other people were thinking about starting their own series at one point. You know, of course, now there's the NAPT and all that other stuff, but I had heard that someone was trying to start a series that was going to rival them, and they were going to boycott the World Series at one point. I had heard that, but, you know, I could be wrong.
It's just too difficult, as big as it's become now. And but, you know, more power to those who think they can do it.
Yeah.
And then also a little interesting debate we can have here, Chris. You know, when is too young for poker? Now, I know, I think I know your answer, because you wrote this very good column many months ago about the educational lessons that poker can offer young children, talking about your granddaughter, right?
Yep, yep.
And play poker with her, and how it wasn't shady or devious at all. It was actually a good life lesson.
Yeah.
Well, now it turns out the Washington Post is reporting that there's a high school in Falls Church, Virginia, that has created an extracurricular poker club. Now, when the guy or gal or whoever came up with this idea proposed it, the school gave them some pretty strict rules before they approved it. They can't be playing for money in this poker club. And also, the club must discuss the educational benefits of poker, you know, mathematics, psychology, other kind of high school classes that tie into poker. What do you think? Poker, it's great for the grandkids, but when you get into high school, does it change something or not?
You know, first of all, I want to say I love how it's always in states that don't actually have
poker
that come up with these kind of things. Have you noticed that? I mean, Virginia is fighting like hell in Portsmouth to try to get their little charity ones opened again. But, you know, it's like, all right, you're not going to give us poker? We're going to teach it in the schools. I mean, that is awesome, first of all. Second of all, no, Scott, I think that it's still the same life lessons. It's still a curricular sort of lesson as well that's being taught there. Math, absolutely. Psychology, absolutely. You know, as long as no money is being – I mean, there are things that – people play baseball for money now, you know, in major leagues and in minor leagues, they play for money. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't teach them baseball in gym, right, in gym class. So why not, right? Why not?
All right, well, far be it for me to rain on anybody's poker parade. And I certainly support this group 100%. But, you know, I like to always play the devil's advocate
here.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what the difference might be in high school between your granddaughter is that you know, your granddaughter probably doesn't have a sense of money, right? Mm. When you sat there and played poker with her, she, you know, she wasn't saving up for a American Doll girl or anything like that quite yet, right?
No, you're right.
Certainly, you don't have her out at you know, at the sweatshop sewing fabrics or anything, right?
Not yet.
Working for a living. And the difference is in high school, I mean, obviously you're older now and you are out there in the workforce. You do have an idea of money. More likely than not, you have an idea of how to waste money. But now things have changed, I think. You're wired a little different, and you could say you're more impressionable as a 4-year-old or 3-year-old than you are as a high school student, but it's a different kind of impressionable at high school, I think.
Yeah, I agree. But I still think if it's done properly, you know, I think that it could still be done and not be harmful. You know, it's the way it's handled. I think just like anything else, I think sex education, you know, sex education in school, as long as it's done properly and professionally and maturely, there's no reason why in school you can't learn something about a delicate nature, you know, whether it's sex or poker. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to belittle it at all.
You know, why not?
But I'm not trying to belittle it. I'm serious. I think that there's nothing wrong as long as the curricular activity is sound and professional and done maturely. It's on the same kind of level. And I don't see, even though they're impressionable and they understand the value of money, they also understand ramifications and responsibilities at that age too. And if that's instilled in them, why not teach them the benefits of a game like poker?
Yeah, and I think one of the best things they could do is bring in, to be honest, a poker pro that's gone broke, which means, you know, any poker pro, you can just pick one.
That's true.
and to talk about money management. I mean, because, you know, the number one thing that I didn't get out of high school was money management. You know, I was an honor student and everything, but I couldn't learn how to balance my checkbook to save my life. And it hurt me when I first got into the real world. And I think that's the best lesson to come out of for high school students is listen to people that, I was living the high life, and then boom, next day.
Yeah.
Destitute.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's funny that you say that, though, because I can distinctly remember having a class where they, like, it was part of math or something, but they showed you how to fill out checks. And
I did that, but they didn't tell you how to handle your money, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, because when you know you get that first paycheck, you're like, wow, I am Bill freaking Gates, man. I have like $87. I'm living it up.
And I then could buy like seven Domino's pizzas and like, you know, a couple of gallons of Coke.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's the virtues of saving and living within your means, I guess, is what I didn't quite get. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't offered at my high school, or I tuned it out, but that would have been a very good lesson for me. And poker is probably the best way of teaching that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, now that you've brought this up, I'm going to go to my local high school nearby here and ask them if they want me to start a club for them.
It would be a guest speaker.
Yeah, see, well, what I would do, though, is I would play the kids for their lunch money.
You'd be like John Candy and Strides, right?
Exactly. Oh, well, if I were you, I'd call.
But that's me, I'm a gambler.
That's me, I'm a gambler. You know, I'm a risk taker.
And then the last thing before we move on, though, I really do hope this thing is very successful, that the people in this club and whoever the advisors are manage it very well. Because here's the thing. I mean, the big thing for poker players now, as we look around, and we'll talk about this in the news desk, too, is, you know, states looking to embrace poker in some form. And, you know, you have to trot out all these witnesses to talk about how poker is a game of skill, not luck, and it's not gambling. You know, if you could show, if a class like this or a club like this takes off and you could show the educational benefits of poker to people that may not understand that, that's only going to help us in other things down the road.
Absolutely. Especially when you're achieving it at that level, then... You know, if they can do it, then why can't adults do it? And that's one of the biggest fears of online poker regulation was children getting into it and, you know, whatever, and not being able to regulate that they're online. So, yeah, kudos to False Church, man. Kudos. Hey, Scott, you know, I was pretty upset this past weekend. You know how it was Thanksgiving Day on Thursday, and then, well, I didn't realize that, when I committed to going to a family thing on the other side of our state, that I was going to miss, like, the best tournament of the year.
Yeah,
And it made me pretty upset. But Apes was this weekend, and congratulations to Annie Up King, who won the horse bracelet. I said I'm very upset I didn't play. Now, how did you do?
I wish I would have gone with you to Palm Beach. I finished 26th, a very respectable finish, until you ask me how many people entered the tournament.
How many people were in this event?
That would be 27.
Oh no.
And, I hate making excuses, but I thought I played really well. I just got on the short end of the stick on like four or five hands.
I love it when people go out last and say, yeah, I played really well. I mean, I love that. You did, huh? You played well. Didn't make any mistakes and went out next to last. Yeah, that's amazing. Good for you.
All right, well, let me give you an example. I can't remember the actual specifics, though, but there was the player that went out 27, all right? And I'm not making fun of that. I can't remember the guy's name, the guy or gal, whoever. But we got tangled in a Raz hand where I had probably split aces, I think. So I had an ace showing, right?
Right.
Ace underneath, another low card underneath, all right? Not a great hand, but, you know, it's deceptive.
Right.
And he had a paint.
Okay.
Jack or queen. Probably, it wasn't a king, but jack or queen.
Right.
And, so I was trying to force some people out, and he came along for the ride, right?
Right.
And then hit another card that was not a card that you would want to get on 4th Street. And eventually I got the other person out, who probably ended up having the best hand overall.
Right.
And we went all the way to the river, and, I ended up tripping up and getting a king low, and he takes down a pot with jack low.
You owe me a dollar.
It's not a bad B story. I'm not saying, but I'm like, you know, how can I play that differently?
Yeah.
You got somebody with a jack up and they're willing to put money in all the way to the end? How can you not take their money? This is how you can't take their money, because you really don't improve.
All right, I sympathize with you then. I'm sorry.
But at least I outlasted that person. But Annie Up King, you know, he's been on a roll. He's moving up in the Player of the Years. His first banana. You said bracelets, so I hope you didn't commit us to a bracelet, because we have no bracelets.
Well, even if we did, he'd have to sell it back to us for a dollar, so we're never really losing our investment on that anyway. So.
And he was very excited and called in, of course. So let's hear what Annie Up King had to say.
Hey, Scott and Chris. This is Annie Up King calling in about the results of the horse qualifier. Interestingly enough, the final three were all Floridians. Really nice play by both Bruckner 7th and Scott C25. Then heads up, play with Scott C25 and myself. Great competition, as usual. I was finally able to win, yes, my first banana. Congrats to all the Andy Up Nation for a great tournament.
And, you know, another all-star final table there, Chris. Heads up, Scott C25 from the Annie Up home game. He's been playing really well, too. He's moved up in the Player of the Year. Yep. And then our good friend Faso finishes third.
Wow. It,
and what I love about Faso finishing third, ever since we moved to Stars and he's taken on this new Billy Buckner ball under my leg name or whatever it is the sign-on, no one knows who he is.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he's doing better. He's incognito in these tournaments.
No one's gunning for him.
So, folks, when you see Bruckner 7th, or 7, or what is it?
Bruckner 7th, I think. I think you're right.
Bruckner 7th.
Yeah.
That's Faso. So you should abuse him as much as you abuse Chris and I.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, it figures, too, that he would do well in that, though, because I wasn't there.
That certainly helped. And I give some more kudos to him. I got knocked out, and then I went and did some work, but I left the tournament up on the screen and checked in a little bit. And when they were down to 14, he was in last place with, like, 960 chips.
Huh.
And so he must have rallied well and finished third, and then, it sounded like a lot of chip swapping going on at that final table anyhow. But
well, it sounded like he played like crap, because if he played well, he would have gone out 27th or 25th, so... You know.
Exactly.
He must have played crappy and finished third.
Yes, he is. He's just a total luck box, that Faso.
Oh, nice job, Faso. I'm happy for him. And, our next event is right around the corner. Somehow these Apes events are stacking up. I don't know if that's by design or what, but Christmas
It was by design, actually. I when I planned the schedule, we would have been playing on Christmas Day. We only got 27 for the first Saturday or last Saturday of November. As much as I would love to have a banana and be like one of four people playing on Christmas Day, So we're kind of stacking them up here at the beginning of the.
Well, it's this next Wednesday, December 8th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's Hose. If you don't know what that means, it's Hold'em Omaha 8 Stud and Stud 8 or better. No Raz, so Scott won't get, pretty much crushed by a jack.
Yes!
And our next free roll is right after that on Saturday, December 11th at noon. It's the No Limit Hold'em Heads Up event. And remember, the password for that event only is Anti-Up Heads Up, all one word. So details for the other stuff, you can go to antiupmagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S. But for that event, remember, it's Anti-Up Heads Up, and only the listeners of this show will be rewarded with a chance to play. So enjoy.
Yeah. And that free roll should be pretty good, because, we canceled the last one at 3,200. Now, I registered yesterday, and I was 19th. And remember, they're giving away 16 seats in this. So.
Yeah.
So actually, here's the thing. No one else needs to sign up, actually. Now that I think about it, it's probably not worth your time. You got to go out and buy stuff for the wife,
You could probably sign up right now and not even show up and win a seat. That's what's going on about right now. So, well, we got some housekeeping, Scott. I know you're real excited because you set this all up. Our cruise bookings are now open.
Yeah, I missed my deadline by a couple days, but our secure booking forms are up and going at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. All the details on all the cruises, the schedules, the tournaments, the classes, everything that you need to know about cruising is there. And if not, my phone number and email's on there. Call me up. Email me, I'll tell you. But go ahead and book online. We have had, I think, four or five cabins on the first one are already gone. And remember, the first 10 cabins sold on each cruise get $20 per person back. So if you're interested on that March 7th cruise out of Fort Lauderdale, better get going. Yeah. Put pause on the iPod and book that. And then we'll be here. We'll be here when you come back. And then, of course, remember the other ones, too. We do have, I think we sold one on the Monarch in the summer already. So, you know, if you want to get on one of those later ones, too, it's $20 per person back to the first 10. Doesn't matter when you book. So don't wait till the last minute.
Very good. Very good. Okay, so now the feedback portion of the show. This week is a clip. Someone called in, called the hotline. His name is John, and he's asking about the $50 bill thing. Let's see what he has to say.
Hello, this is John. I never heard of the curse of the 50 before. Could you guys explain about it? I got four $50 bills tucked in my wallet and hidden just in case, so maybe I got the curse. Maybe I really am a good poker player, and that's the only reason I'm losing.
Okay, now, I have to admit, I did a little research on this.
I'm glad you did, because I didn't.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It would have made no difference whether you did or not anyway, because really there was nothing out there. It was a bunch of people saying, is it really jinxed? And then it was like in forums, and people were saying, yeah, it's jinxed. Tell you what, you don't need to keep those 50s. Just send them to me, you know? So, I mean, and a lot of them said that it was old people. You know, old people just, it's an old-time thing, and they couldn't really, and then someone said, I thought it was the 50-cent piece, and they start arguing with each other, no, it's the $50 bill, no, it's the 50-cent piece, they're going back and forth, and it's anarchy on the forums, you know, trolls just trying to tick people off, and then they set up a Sacagawea versus, you know, Susan B. Anthony arguments, you know, so really there was, I really couldn't find anything specific about why people think it's jinxed or cursed or whatever, it's just, it's some old thing that. I couldn't find it, and you know it's just in the lexicon now. So, sorry about that, John. But really, yeah. If you don't want your 50s, just send them along. I'll take
it. And to be honest, I never really knew about it either until you know it's actually dealers. I think they were telling me that.
Oh yeah,
and particularly when we started the NEA Poker Cruise, and you know our Poker Cruise Manager Jody's coming on the show later on today. I remember him telling me, "Hey, don't bring those 50s on the ship. People don't want them." I'm sorry, it's what the little lady in the bank gave me. I don't care. People don't want them.
It's true. I mean, it is true. A lot of people think of them as just a hexed or whatever. I don't know, whatever the hell. But, John, sorry we couldn't come up with anything more substantial for you there. But, and a lot of people were like, hey, you know, the slot machines took my 50s just fine. And I'm like, yeah, and you didn't win either. Doesn't that say something? You didn't win with those 50s. You came home penniless. So maybe they are cursed.
Hey, you can curse me with 50s all day. You can keep the fives. That's the way I look at it. So, all right, John, we appreciate you calling in. And this will be this week's hotline clip. And everybody else, remember to call 813-448-1120. And you can win valuable swag like John just did. A T-shirt worth $50. Not quite, but pretty close. From PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerware.com. And this week I'm going to suggest that maybe she makes a shirt for gals that says $50 bill on board, don't touch.
Jeez. Oh, man.
Hey, you know, women don't want to be ogled and stuff, right? You know, I get tired of guys like being leering at them.
No, man. You come up with some gems there, you know. We should start our own shirt company, I'm telling you.
I don't know whether she's made any of mine ideas yet, though.
We'll have to get her on the show.
Check Robin. Yeah.
Well, I know you guys think it seems like it's already been a newsy show, but here's some more news for you. Here's the Ante Up News Desk.
Kentucky suit to strip domain names from more than 100 poker or gambling websites returns to court on December 6th when the Commonwealth's attorneys have asked that a group of sites be broken into smaller groups. First up is a handful of sites that cater more towards sports wagering, Poker News Daily reports. IMEGA Chairman Joe Brennan, who represents some of the sites involved in the litigation, said, quote, "We look forward to meeting them in court again because we are fairly comfortable that we're going to prevail."
It's just like a lawyer to say fairly. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Here's the thing, I saw that, I'm like, what? Fairly comfortable?
I'm sure that makes the sites feel better, too, doesn't it?
Oh, I know. I mean, come on. There's kind of like this wink-wink kind of thing that you know, these candidates for these parties that have no chance of winning. They go out there and we're going to prevail tomorrow. And when even mom is like, honey, no, no, you're not. But you go out there and you say, we are going to prevail. You don't go, you know what? I'm feeling like we might have a shot. You don't do that.
You're not getting paid, you know, all this money and, you know, whatever to have them say, maybe we'll win, you know. I mean, even like when the Super Bowl comes around, the obvious underdog, there's always some idiot in the locker room who pipes up and says, I'll guarantee you victory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody remembers him after the game, so who cares? Just say you're going to win the damn case, man. God,
laugh
you're a lawyer.
Before the game and after the game, but but I mean, there's nothing inspiring by saying, we're fairly confident we're going to win.
Fairly comfortable.
Well, you know, I hope the fairly gets stripped from there and this thing all goes away, but we'll see.
It'd be about time, too. Blanca Games is finally nearing complete ownership of the Ultimate Bet brand, as final details with the software company that formerly owned the online site appear imminent, Poker News Daily reports. The deal involves financial considerations if Blanca sells or merges the site before the end of March 2011, which is right around the corner, really.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of lawyers involved there. There's a lot of little pieces of pie in here, and you know, the big part of the ownership group was already gone, but they had to work out this last part. But so you know, we had a semi-interesting debate going on the forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum about UB, and this kind of plays into my points in that fight that you know, until the new ownership is firmly in charge, you know, you never know what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, I love this item. And I know you love this item, too. Update. Where are they now, as they might say? Samuel McMaster Jr., who famously persuaded a New Mexico judge to let him play poker to help repay $440,000 his fraud victims lost, managed to earn an astounding $1,461 on the tournament trail, and now admits he's not and never was a poker pro. And by the way, he's being treated for a gambling addiction.
First of all, I have to say, I'm impressed he turned a profit in all this time, to be honest with you.
And you know what? I don't know whether he turned a profit. I mean, the story said that he cashed for $1,461 in one of those Venetian deep stack tournaments that was like a $350 buy-in. So I don't know how much money he blew trying to win this one cash, you know?
That's true. The buy-ins and the travel and everything could have... put him in more in debt, but oh my God, you knew this was going to happen. I mean, how stupid is that judge, man? Oh my God. And I love that he's being treated for gambling addiction now. Oh my God. So you can't blame him now and all that $440,000, you know, it was an addiction. He had a problem.
Yeah,
oh
when I tell you, I mean, I'm joking about it now, but you know, I want to kick this guy's rear end. Not that I'm planning on frauding anyone or anything, but if I ever get down in the luck, I was going to use the same argument now. I thought he was a trailblazer, Chris.
Yeah, no. He's ruined it for everybody.
Yes. I'm ticked off, and he didn't take any money from me at all.
That's what I was hoping you and I could do when we didn't pay our printing bill for the magazine. We could just go like to, you know, Derby Lane and try to win the money back.
He didn't steal money from us, Chris, but he stole opportunity.
That's right. Now I want to get on that bandwagon. I want to call New Mexico and tell them that they owe us some cash now. I want to get in on it.
Oh, man. All right, well, we're going to handle our mailbag in our main topic today. We're really switching up the show, Chris.
Yeah, this is cool.
Everybody's all confused out there.
It's good, though. It's good to mix it up. That's what real poker players do.
Oh, very good. Nice. But I'm sure you're going to get us going on the ride-along with Columbo train here, right?
Yeah, you know, last week we had Ace of Spades, Queen of Spades, and we decided not to re-raise. We called and checked the flop of 10 of Diamonds, 9 of Spades, King of Spades. Pretty sweet flop for us.
Mm-hmm.
The opponent bets 25,000 into this pot. So what are we going to do now?
All right. In position, this was kind of one of my little calling cards, and by my extensive poker tournament experience, you can see that it's a good play. When I'm in position, I like the raise on the come to kind of help disguise my hand, and then also you set up a free ripper card and just an old limit poker kind of trick.
Yeah.
But we're out of position here, and I don't like to raise on the come, even though we we have a lot of outs here. So I think I'm just going to call here, control the pot, and, you know, I've got some options, I think, the rest of the hand, regardless of what cards come. You know, this could very well be just a standard C-bet here. If we just call, you know, maybe if we miss on the turn, we can check, and he'll check behind, and then we'll get a free card either way.
You know, I have to just call two, but I'm not happy about it, because I think a call makes it less likely I'll get paid off if I hit a
very
flush,
true.
Right?
Very true.
So I'm still calling because I don't want to get it all in or raise and then face another raise and then have to put in my entire life on a draw here. But again, I don't like that if I make the hand I'm looking to make, hopefully like a jack of hearts would come or something,
yes,
to make
yes.
a more disguised Broadway. But if a spade comes, there's no way this guy's paying me off unless he has, you know, a smaller spade draw. So I'm gonna call, but I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I contemplated raising here, but the problem I think with raising is if we're up against a real hand, he's going to get it all in, and then we're going to be put to a test. Do we want to call off our stat or however much money we don't know what our opponent has here on a draw, and you don't want to be calling on a draw, right? You want to be
right.
pushing. So,
right.
So I think really the choice here is to raise big here and shut the guy out. Or call. Folding it seems ridiculous.
And the other thing here, too, is a check raise. A lot of people like to check raise with flush draws.
Uh-huh.
So if the other player is savvy enough to think, all right, you're probably on a flush draw. I've already got a set of 10s or a made hand or aces or something. He'll probably call your all-in knowing that you're drawing to just spades, and I'm sure he'd want to get it all-in with you if you're drawing and he's made. So, you know, that's another problem with the check raise, too. So I'm for the call. I just hope we hit our hand and it's sort of disguised. The forum says almost unanimously that they'll call. They don't want to. Oh, there you go too. They don't want to face a re-raise shove just yet. But one says shove if we think our opponent might fold. What do you think about that?
Well, now you're taking the positional advantage away from him, making him make the decision, but. I don't know whether we really know enough about our opponent to know whether he'll fold here or not. It just seems a little too risky for me at this point.
Okay. All
but
right.
I am not opposed to it, you know. It's an interesting play. It's a bit better than folding.
No, but again, if I'm going to shove, then I'm probably going to bet anyway instead of, you know, if I'm going to shove, I might as well just make a normal
yeah.
bet. You know what I'm trying to say?
You're right, yeah. Shove, check raise shove seems very odd.
Yeah.
All
right, well, let's ride a little further along with Columbo in this tournament.
Welcome back. Well, what'd you do with your monster draw? I hope you shoved, but I'm going to screw it up royally. I don't know what I'm thinking, but I called. It doesn't even make any sense. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I call. And then when I don't hit my draw on the turn, the two of diamonds falls, what am I going to do? If I call another bet, and sure enough, I check and he bets 50K...
You know, you could have left earlier. I mean, you had the opportunity.
I find that when you play a hand horribly during a good run, the best thing you can do is just fold it and reset. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fold it, and I'm going to forget that this ever happened. Of course, no bad play goes unpunished, and as we fast forward to the 4,000, 8,000, 1,000 level, we've been getting crushed by bad cards and bad re-steal attempts. We are all the way down to 129K of chips, and we get dealt queen queen. Since we're under the gun, we act first. How do you want to play it, bet or shove?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Chris, you know, we've always had a lot of fun with our guest today. Jody Russell has been a veteran poker room executive, experienced New York, Florida, and elsewhere. Now he's the poker room manager at those great Wendover resorts out in northern Nevada. He's also one of the managers of the Antioch Poker Cruise Poker Room. We go to them into writing a call the floor column every month at Annie Up now. So he answers floor call questions. Also does it in our form at annieupmagazine.com/forum. So he's kind of our rules expert, I guess we could say, right?
Absolutely.
And today we've invited him on to recap some of the answers he's given, and we were going to throw some new dilemmas at him. Jody, how you doing out there?
I'm doing great, guys. How's it going?
Well, it's going good now that we got you on the show. We weren't sure if it was going to work out, but now we've got you on the show, we're doing fantastic.
And
I appreciate you guys having me, and I appreciate everything you do for me. Thanks a lot, guys.
Right back at you. How's the ski season going out there?
It's going great. I go every weekend. We're about a two-hour drive from Salt Lake City, and I cruise over there and go up to a really nice ski resort called Solitude and have a great time.
Don't be breaking your ankle before you got to come back on one of our cruises.
All right, well, okay, I've got you. All right, let's get a start here, Jody. I was actually playing in a tournament on Thanksgiving Day because that's how much my family loves me. And I noticed something that I've seen before, and I just thought, you know, hey, I was going to talk about it on the show, and then you happened to be on the show, and you'd be a better person to actually answer it than Chris. So we were in a tournament, and it was early on, so they hadn't sold all the seats. So there's probably only 5 active players at the table and then 5 dead stacks there. And, you know, I noticed a dealer, let's say the big blind was one of the dead stacks, right? Dealer deals the cards, and then she immediately collects the big blind, moves it into the middle of the pot. All right, now I've seen that done a lot, and obviously that money is not going to be, no one's going to raise from the dead stack. But I noticed that it caused some confusion in this particular example because there are only so many people at the table that when guys went to raise, they were doing like 3x the small blind because they're looking across the table to see what the bet was rather than the big blind. So let me ask you, when you train your dealers, do you train them to collect those blinds or leave them out there, or does it matter?
What I do is I teach them to go ahead and kill the hand, and then they pull the blind in just a little bit, but they should still leave it out kind of in position so that the players can look up, and when they see that small blind, their eyes will be drawn to the big blind as well. Because I get what you're saying. If you pull it to the middle of the pot, you know, players are only thinking about themselves and the hand that they have, and they look up and they see, say, 50. They want to make it 150, and it should have actually been 300 if they're going to go 3 times the big blind. So, yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, there is no black and white, but it is a good idea for them to leave that big blind out there, pull it in a little bit so they don't forget it, but still leave it kind of in semi in the, what should I say, a semi-position, I guess. that way people, that sounds goofy, I know, but that way people can see it and get the right amounts in, and then we don't have any mistakes that they start blaming the dealer for.
Well, that makes sense, too, because we are creatures of habit, and regardless of people actually being in the seats or not, when you're playing your hand, you look up to see where you are in position, what's behind you, what the situation is, and if those blinds have disappeared, and you look up and don't see him, it's just going to cause some sort of confusion at the table and slow things down. So I agree with leaving it out there.
Right. And, you know, that actually brings up another situation that that I hear a lot of people back and forth. And every tournament director, every card room manager has their own opinion about it. But a lot of people are used to seeing dealers, let's say there's 3 players in a pot, and the starting bet was 200. And a couple of callers, and then the 4th player raises it to 1,000. Well, some people expect the dealers to pull that 200 into the middle. Some people expect the dealers to put the 200 out in front of each bet and put the 800 behind so that everyone can see what the exact action is. You know, my opinion about that is that you leave the bets out. You make it clear what the bets that have been called are and then what the raise was. And if it gets to where it's too messy and there's too many chips all over the layout, then you pull stuff in and kind of clean it up a little bit.
Right.
But I've experienced looking up before and all the money's gone off from out in front of the players, and I can't figure out who's still in the hand.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
very
good
point.
Frustrating.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're off to a good start. Our next one comes from Glance302. This is from our forum on our website. He says, in a Delaware poker room, the dealer overturned the first card that was dealt to the button. The card was shown to everyone, and the dealer continued to pitch cards in order. When the dealer reached the button again, he gave that player 2 consecutive cards. the one he was destined to receive, and then the original burn card. Three or so players at the table objected. Was the dealer correct?
Absolutely. If that room's following TDA rules, Tournament Directors Association, then one of the rules is it's acceptable for a player to receive two cards on the button. The deal here is that as long as the cards are random and no one knows what they are, then it really doesn't make a difference. You know, that cutting down into the deck and that kind of thing that some places do, that's kind of an old school rule. It's an old procedure, and you know, I mean, there's very few dealers that are going to be able to get the exact cards to the guy on the button at the exact time that they need to if they're doing something fishy. And that was what that was meant to prevent. You know, a long time ago when these guys were all hustlers and kind of a seedy group of guys that were playing poker, they didn't trust each other. And so they insisted that you didn't do that. But these days it's not that big a deal. And it is in line with the Poker Tournament Directors Association to just go ahead and pitch two cards to that guy on the button.
Now, I do have a question about that. And I totally I agree with the ruling, and I've always done that in my home games, and that's just the way it is, and I don't have a problem with it. But I just wonder, are the people objecting because they think that you're... Because you know how the word this person used was the one he was destined to receive. So then people are objecting because they think that you're messing with the destiny of the flop, the turn, and the river, and that you should go down past that point to get a card for him since the flop, turn, and river is now being changed because of the dealer's mistake?
I'm not sure why they object. Some people are just suspicious about the dealer rigging the deck, perhaps. Some people, I think, object to things just because they've seen it done differently in other places, and they don't really know why they're objecting. It's just because it's different, and they don't like seeing something different.
Right.
But there are people out there who do have the mindset that, well, this is what exactly should have happened, and you shouldn't mess with fate and that kind of thing. But, you know, there's so many variables in poker that you can't ever realign things once an error occurs. And, you know, sometimes exposing a card isn't even an error. It's just the way it flew through the air and where it hit the button or hit the rail. And when that happens, you know, like I said, as long as everybody has two random cards when they start the hand, it really doesn't matter. You know,
okay.
The deal is everybody should have two random cards, and no one should know what anyone else has. As long as that takes place, then we're good to go. Let's play poker.
All right, now you mentioned the TDA, Tournament Directors Association rules, and I know those you follow those religiously. What are some of the rules? Give us an example of one or two rules from the TDA that might be surprising to the poker playing public, or that they may not know.
One of them that I see people get surprised by a lot is Rule 43, and it's titled Ethical Play. And basically, I won't read the whole thing here. But it's dealing with soft play and penalties which can be a result of soft play and or the forfeiture of chips or disqualification. And a lot of times what happens is a player will be last to act on the river, and they'll have the absolute nut hand, and they'll check. And that is a complete violation of this rule. If you have the best hand in poker and you're last to act, you should be moving aggressively to get as many chips as possible. And, you know, somebody, and I've had people actually tell me, well, I'm not going to bet into that guy. He's my father-in-law. Well, that's exactly why we have this rule. You can't soft play other players. It goes against the grain of what poker is all about. And especially in tournaments, it's everyone's responsibility to try to win as many chips as they can. And in that particular situation with someone checking the nuts on the river when they're last at, is the only absolute time that we can go, you absolutely cannot do that ever.
Right.
But there are other times where, you know, somebody bets, the guy calls, another guy raises, and one of the players folds. And then the other two players look at each other and say something like, you want to check it down? Well, you just can't do that. And you know, I'm very strict on that in cash games as well, because it's people that are familiar with each other, or they're related to each other, or they just play together all the time. And it alienates those who aren't players in the room that they're in on a regular basis. And it upsets people. You know, we've all been in situations where we've been out of town, I go into a room we don't normally play in, and it's already a little intimidating being the new guy there. To sit down at a table and get run out of a pot and then have the other two players check it down or talk about wanting to chop the pot, heaven forbid, you know, it's just not good. And so this rule deals with that. A lot of people are in shock when you walk over and tell them, hey, look, I'm going to have to give you a warning here. You can't be doing that. And if you do it again, then we'll probably have to take some chips or give you a penalty away from the table.
That's a good point.
The other one that I really like is rule number one. And this one surprises people every now and then also. It basically says that floor people are responsible to consider the best interest of the game, and fairness is the top priority in the decision-making process. And it goes on to say that on occasion, we can ignore the technical interpretation of the rules and do what's best for the game. And that's one that you have to use wisely. And you have to be cautious about. You can't just run around ignoring the rules all the time. But every now and then we get, you know, some people are black and white in their minds about things. And they will start objecting to something that you're doing because they know that the rule that applies to the situation you're addressing says a certain thing and you're not doing that. You know, and at that point that's when we call into the attention of rule number one that on occasion, we can ignore the rules and do what's best for the game. And it's a common sense rule, and I've often said that they should have this rule in our judicial system. So I like it a whole lot. That just people off guard sometimes, though.
Well, that's a good point, too. You know, we actually talked about your first ruling once before, too, because your good friend Linda Johnson had written a column about it in a rival magazine. But she had talked about that soft play rule, and a lot of people just don't even know about it. It's a great thing that you brought up there. All right, well, our next question is from Jeff Collins from Wisconsin. He was playing in a 2-4 limit hold'em game. Basically, four players limped in to see the flop, so it was $2. When it got to the turn, somebody was all in for $2. And then there was some argument about what the person could raise to after that. So he wants to know, when the betting level is at $4 and there is a limp for half a bet, what would most card rooms define as a raise at that point?
Okay, well, see, this gets a little tricky because no limit has become so popular, and there's a different way to approach this situation in no limit than in limit. In limit, there's what's called the half-bet rule. And so any time a player puts in half a bet or more, it's considered a bet. So in that situation, the player's all in for two, so the other players could either call the two or raise to six. There is no complete to four there. There's no complete in raise. There's no complete in raise in poker. Some places do that. It's kind of weird. Now, had the guy been all in for one, then it wouldn't even count as a bet. They could call the one or they could make it four. And it's interesting to note in that situation that the technical explanation of the rules of poker, if the player had only put one into the pot, and let's say you're in a room with a bet and three raises, that one does not count as a bet. So if somebody makes it four, that's the first bet. There's still three raises remaining. In the situation where the guy is all in for two, that counts as a bet. So now all they can do is call the two or raise to six. All right, so from the two, there's only three raises remaining. Does that sound clear enough?
Yeah, no, I just want to make sure that you told us what goes on there, because I think the argument there was somebody thought that they could raise to eight because, you know, since it was a complete bet, to him a complete bet would be four, just because the guy didn't have enough to make it four, that he could make it eight. I think that's what started the argument.
Yeah, that player was wanting to complete and then raise.
Right.
And that's actually not an option in poker. It's a twisted variation of the rules that does occur in some rooms. I mean, some rooms use that as a house rule. You know, and in that situation, as long as they're consistent about it and as long as that's what they do all the time, then it's fine to do. The only problem is that it gives the player who makes it from two to eight a huge advantage. I mean, if the guy has a big hand, he's being allowed an unfair advantage to protect his hand at that point.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Very interesting. All right, well, Jeff, that was our mailbag question of the week, and we are going to send you a deck of those J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. Chris, why don't you take this very interesting question from Gundam, so I'll close it off with an equally interesting question from Nick.
All right, cool. Well, Gundam says, and this was from our forum, he says, I understand that verbal statements are binding to the game of poker. However, are they binding from a gambling regulation standpoint? I think he's thinking, you know, if a player says I call or all in but never physically commits his chips to the pot, can there be any enforcement taken by the house to commit his chips for him? He says, of course, I understand they can pause the game and the dealer can verbally state that the player needs to put their chips into the pot, but when push comes to shove, are the chips ever officially wagered according to gambling laws? Can the player rack up his chips and cash out without breaking any gambling laws? And would the casino be breaking gambling laws by physically leaning over and pushing the chips into the pot?
Well, my first reaction to that is that Gundam should seek an attorney's advice. I'm not a lawyer, so I couldn't tell you. From the standpoint of a poker room manager, I will say this. The chips in the casino belong to the casino. They do not belong to the players. And the players have an implied contract with the house when they walk in and sit down at their table that they will agree to abide by their decisions and their rules. So if I have a situation where I walk over to a table and the dealer tells me this gentleman declared all in, lost the hand, but now he's saying he didn't put his chips in the pot, so technically he's not all in. Well, the rules of poker say if you say you're all in, then you're all in. And that's the rules that we follow. And if they don't want to follow those rules, then first of all, I'm going to refuse to cash the guy out. I'm not cashing those chips out. I'm not going to let him rack up and run out with them. I'm going to reach down, take them off the table, and shove them over to where they need to go in front of the person that won the pot. And if they have a problem with that, they can take that up with their attorney. They can do whatever they want. But they're going to be thrown out of the casino. They're not going to be allowed to play there anymore. And, you know, someone that does something like that, they're just trying to stir up problems. They're not really good for poker, and they're not really someone that we want playing in our rooms.
Nice. Very good.
Excellent. Excellent. So, I mean, Chris, you're in a lot of trouble, buddy.
Hey, I've never done that.
All right, we got one more question here for you, Jody. And obviously, you know, you run a proper poker room in a casino, but, you know, a lot of our players play home games, home tournaments, and some odd things happen in those that would never happen in a real poker room. But that doesn't change the fact that that people are curious as to ruling. So can I ask you to kind of step out of your official poker room manager suit and tie and kind of rule on what you would do in this odd situation? And it comes from Nick from North Carolina. And they were playing a tournament at home. Blinds are 300, 600 with a 50 ante. And the wife and kids were out of the way, so he put the two dogs at the house in the bedroom, all right? So they're not running around chewing up chips and people's ankles and things like that. But, you know, dogs being dogs, they need to go out and do their business. So at one point he heard the dog, Mocha, I think it's named, pawing at the door. So he turned to the tournament director and said, you know, hey, I think the dog needs to go out, and the tournament director said, all right, I paused. He says he went to, there's two rooms in the tournament, and they can't see each other. So the tournament director got up, went to the other room, stopped the clock, told the table there that they're on a break, came back into the room where Nick was, and told Nick to go ahead and take the dogs out because he stopped the clock. All right, we clear on what's happening here so far? All right.
Yeah, I got you.
All right. So Nick here said, great, thanks. Got up, told the table, hey, nobody can touch my big blind. Took his dogs out. When he came back in, found out that his table continued to play. The players said they claimed that they had no idea they're on a break. And I guess what happened in the hand, the big blind, the button went all in, the small blind called, ended up splitting the pot, which was essentially Nick's big blind in the antes. So he says the small stack player refused to put any chips back into the stack. The other player did give him his money back. How would you rule on this?
And now they're in a situation where they actually have a tournament director there?
Yes.
Did I hear that right?
Yes.
If I were the tournament director, I would tell the small blind, look, either give the guys chips back, because this is my mistake for not making it clear to you folks that you shouldn't be playing. So we're going to negate that hand, and we're going to back everything up. Now, if you don't want to do that, then I'll just take your chips out of play, and you're out of the tournament. I mean, if you're in a home game playing in that situation, it's supposed to be a friendly-type environment. And, you know, either come there and play friendly or don't. But I would have one question that I would consider first, and that is, well, actually two questions. Number one, how well do these people know each other? And number two, how much money are they playing for? Because if you're playing, you know, if you're in a home game, because people play for so many different amounts of money in a home game, if this is everybody throwing $20 in and having a good time and drinking beer and, hey, I'm taking the dogs out, then there shouldn't be a problem there. That guy should give his chips back. If this is more of a underground, illegal type operation and they're taking a rake and everybody's in for $400 or $500 or $200 or $300 even, then perhaps it's the gentleman that missed the big blind, it's his responsibility to say, hey look, guys, you know we're stopping right now because I'm taking the dogs out, and I don't want to lose my big blind. You know, it's every player's responsibility to protect their own hand and protect their own chips. So it could go two different ways, and my decision would be largely based on the amount of money at stake and how professional of an operation we're involved in at this point.
Hmm. Well, I just have one question. Okay. Who let the dogs out? All right, I'm sorry. All right, sorry. Jody, as always, you know, great answers, and that's why you help us with our cruises, because we know you're very professional and you pretty much know everything you need to know. And thanks for real. I know it's pretty early out there for you, so we're really glad that you got up and didn't break your ankle or anything last night and could join us on the show today.
I appreciate the sentiment. I have a question for you guys now.
Okay.
Which one of you is the best player?
That's Scott. Scott's the best player because he can actually show up for tournaments. I'm usually on the road somewhere driving around.
Right on. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you having me, and as I said, thanks for everything. And I sure do hope we get some more call the floor emails and questions. And I enjoy answering them, and enjoy being involved in your organization and the cruises. It's a great time. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
All right. Thanks, Jody. Take care.
Take care, Jody.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And we should remind our listeners, too, if you want to submit a call to the floor question, you can go to the forum at anyupmagazine.com/forum. Look for the call to floor thread, post it there. And you can also email us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com, and we'll get them off to Jody to get them answered for you.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Anti-Up PokerCast.
Okay, Chris, been saving up a couple hands from sites not affiliated with Anti-Up.
Okay.
All right. These are quick hands. All right, so I'm using all the appropriate keywords here to not offend our very generous sponsor. But we're to the bottom of the barrel on Hands of the Week, so... You know, all these folks that are sending in these hands, knowing that we are not affiliated with these sites, I gotta dip into them now.
If you know my favorite band, you know you know the kind of hand. All right, that's all I gotta say. All right, let's get going with it.
All right. Okay, this comes from Chris McGrath, parts unknown. I'm gonna say North Dakota.
Okay, that sounds pretty good.
Oh, actually, no. He says that he just moved down the coast from Washington to California.
See? Okay. All right.
Just kind of skipped over.
You were close. You were close. Yeah.
North Dakota's...
Like horizontally. If you went all the way across the country, you might have run into North Dakota from where you live. So we're pretty close. Now, I think this is one of those quick hands, so we should probably try to do it really quickly. I have to react quickly here, right? I can't sit there and really pontificate on what he should be doing. So I'm gonna just really quickly think about it.
All right, nine players at the table. It is a 2 cent, 5 cent, no limit.
Okay.
And it looks like it must be a, I don't know if it's a tournament. I haven't played these, but he says 730 players involved here.
That's weird. How can it be 2 cent, 5 cent, and have all these people? What does that mean?
I don't know. We're doing this fast. Let's just skip
all right,
the details.
Let's skip it. Who cares? Get the hand.
All right. And he says he's just started playing this this version. And he says one of the things that he learns is you only see a player's actions if they go all the way. So if most players fold quickly, the table is basically heads up or three handed. And most times, a 2x or 3x bet from any position will kill the hand pre-flop, as it seems easier for players to get away from marginal hands in this play style. The bad side is you don't get to see other players' play styles. Of course, that's the whole advantage of this version, that I, from what I understand.
Okay.
Play it.
Right, right.
He says the average chip stack is $4. The maximum buy-in is $5. And we have $13.90 in front of us, mostly from small, squiggly dollar pots.
Wow. So we started with $5 and we built it up to almost $14. That's pretty impressive.
Not bad, not bad. All right, the under-the-gun player who has 252 in a stack bets a dime. So I guess that's, what, a min-raise?
Yeah, it's a min-raise because it's 2-5.
Under-the-gun plus one who has a $5 stack raises to 20 cents. So we're playing limit poker here, apparently. And it folds around to us in the big blind with ace of clubs, deuce of clubs, pots 37 cents.
I call.
What do we want to do?
I call. Go ahead, move on. Let's call. Let's move on. I call.
All right. You know, I'm going to call too.
All right, good.
And the other gun calls too. So we got three going to the flop. Now, our hero thought about raising to 40 cents here, but he decided that ace of clubs, deuce of clubs is marginal. As he says, he's observed the players tend to be a bit tight unless they have something. You know, from what I understand about this style of play, that probably makes sense, right?
No raise. Don't want to raise because we're out of position, rest of the hand. Don't want to raise at all. Want to call, see a flop, hopefully get a flush draw.
Flop comes, the tray of clubs, four of clubs, eight of spades.
Bingo, bango, bongo. We got a flush draw and a wheel draw. Yay! Actually, we got a steel wheel draw. This is fantastic. I'm going to bet out.
All right, you can't just bet out. You have to bet out an amount. So what are you betting out?
Let's see. There's 37 cents in pot. I'm going to bet 25 cents. A quarter. Nice little quarter. Round little quarter. Two bits. There you go. Bet it.
Oh, you're killing me, man. All right, so we decided to check, though.
Oh, not a good idea. Don't want to check here.
Not a good idea?
No, I like to bet out. It disguises my hand. They think I'm trying to steal it because I'm in a small blind. This guy might have a big pair or overpair. Might bet out. I'm going to have a bigger hand. I'm going to go all in, take all his money, and be happy.
All right, the undergun player checks. And the big raiser bets half the pot, 82 cents total. And it comes back to us.
I'm gonna call here just because I think now I can probably get heads up with this guy and you know, maybe make a bigger hand on the turn. I'm still on the draw, so, but I have a ton of outs. Even this guy's got a big pair like jacks or something. My ace could be an out too, so I don't mind raising here. But you know, I'm trying to get money in the pot. If I raise, I could scare him out too. So let's just call. I was probably looking forward to betting and seeing if somebody had an overpair. And then him re-raising me and then getting it in. But if he's already bet out, maybe I can call and get the under the gun out of there and go heads up and maybe my hand's a little bit disguised. So I'm going to call.
All right. That's exactly what our hero does. And the under the gun player gets out of the way. So see? Textbook. Okay.
There you go.
Heads up.
There you go.
Pots $1 and 3 cents. And the turn is the six of clubs. So board now is the tray of clubs, four of clubs, eight of spades, six of clubs. And our hero just says bingo, so the bango bongo is not
the Well, no, because that's not the flush or the straight flush. If it was the flush, it would be bingo bango, and if it was a straight flush, it would be bingo bango bongo. But see, he's only got the straight, so he's got the bingo. He's got the low end of the straight. It's kind
of... No, we got a flush here, right? Six clubs.
Oh, clubs. I'm sorry. Yeah. Clubs. I'm sorry. It's a club. So he made our... Yeah, he made our nut flush. Well, it's not a nut flush, but it's close to the nut flush.
So you played so quickly there that you forgot what you had.
I'm telling you, I totally forgot. I didn't think it was six of clubs. I'm sorry. I was thinking it was a different six. So, yeah, now that we've got our flush, we're doing really well. I'm going to check to the guy again.
You're going to check?
Yeah, I want to see if he bets.
All right. That's what we do, and the opponent checks behind, which is exactly what we thought would happen, right?
Yeah, probably. But that's all right, because we've got the nuts. Really only afraid of the board pairing now. Obviously, it's not the actual nuts because of straight flushes, but we doubt this guy has that hand. So I don't mind the check behind. We'll see what happens on the river. I will probably bet the river. So
yeah, I mean, you're out of position here. So, I mean, you know, this is going to kind of happen when the draw gets there. Yeah, I mean, a lot of draws got there, too. It wasn't just clubs and straights, too. So, got to expect that this is just what happens when you're out of position. And you're right. Then you make a bet on the river, a value bet on the river, and hope you get paid off. And if not, well, you know, next time be in position.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you said he checked behind, right? So, we're going to the river, then. We're going to the river.
Going to the river, and the river is the five of clubs. Ooh. So, the final board is tray clubs, four clubs. Thanks for ruining the suspense, everybody.
Sorry.
Tray clubs, four clubs, eight of spades, six of clubs, five clubs. We have the steel wheel. Or actually, no. Even better. Six eye straight flush,
yeah.
But we have a steel wheel, too. It's just
We do. We're not going to play it, but we have it.
It's just one of those big monster truck kind of steel wheels.
Wow. So we have... we don't have the nuts, though. And this is one of those... You got the bad beat.
Oh, very interesting, yes.
Right? We still don't have the nuts, but I find it hard to believe this guy has the... seven of clubs, right? That's what gives him the straight flush higher, right? Three, four, five, six, seven. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm thinking. Let's hope he has a high card in his hand, like the king of clubs, or the queen of clubs. You know, like kings or queens. And so now we could. I'm probably gonna bet. I know if I check, you know, what are you doing? You're checking the straight flush, but really, you got to bet here because you're gonna miss an opportunity to bet if the guy doesn't have a club in his hand.
Right. You know, if he does have a club in hand, he's probably going to raise you.
Yeah,
he's
so
put you on a straight flush.
Either way, you're not going to make money unless he has a club, so you might as well bet it. If he has a club, he's probably going to call or go over the top of you. So I'm going to bet, and it's really not that much in the pot, so what, a dollar? I don't know. I'll bet like...
$1.73 in the pot.
Oh, $1.73. All right, so I'm going to bet... Wait a minute. How could it be $1.73? It was $1.03 in the pot, you said, and then they both checked the turn.
I'm just reading what's provided to me here.
All right. Well, it was $1.03 when it started, so I'm betting 75 cents on $1.03 pot. Yeah, it's got to be more than that, though, right? Because the pot was.
I think it probably is $1.73.
All right, so then I'll bet $1.
You're gonna bet $1.
Yep, I'm betting $1 and hoping this guy has a big club in his hand.
Yeah, of course. You know, the more I think about it, there's probably little chance that he has a big club in his hand no, that's not true. It's right. He could have just a big single club.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He could have a single club. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Right. I'm sorry. All right. So, our hero decides he's trying to figure out what the best part, the better amount to do. And he knows because the guy raised him that he might want to play. So he bets $2.60.
He bets $2.60?
Yep, a little ridiculously over bet there. But, you know, this time, sometimes this works out. You know, it makes it look like you're scared. And if the guy takes the bait, then, you know, it's better than the buck that you're going to get out of him.
Okay.
But you have to be fairly confident that he's going to fall for the bait, I think. Because I would rather take the buck than take the shot that he's going to give me 260. Yeah. It might be a little greedy, I think.
I'd have bet $1 there, but...
Particularly because we have the ace of clubs, too. If we didn't have the ace of clubs, then maybe the ace of clubs is out, and then that guy would obviously be shoving on us.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, can the king of clubs be that confident here?
No, I don't think the king of clubs is going to fold here, considering that, you know, it's one of these quick hands, and the guy was in the blind. So, I don't know. I think that if I had the king of clubs, I probably would call... But, you know, then again, it could be like pocket nines and a nine of clubs, and the guy can just fold here. So I think that's just too much of a bet. I want to get paid off, so I'm going to bet $1. And so the 260 to me is a little too much. But maybe he'll call if he does have pocket kings, you know, or queens. All right, so I'm not agreeing with that bet, but if I do have the king clubs, I'm probably calling that bet. So,
you know what? I'm going to split the difference here. I'm going to bet the pot.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure a pot-sized bet would get paid off if somebody has a club. I think dollar's probably shooting a little too low.
Okay.
I think 260 is shooting way too high, though.
All right. Well, you know, $1.73 in the pot, it's more than half the pot if I bet $1, you know. Pot size bet is a good bet. I mean, it's a good bet. It's just.
But you also remember, I mean, we're playing these micro limits, too, where, you know, the pots aren't quite inconsistent with if that we were playing a $2, $5 here.
Right. Well, this guy started with $5, too, so that $2.73 bet. That's plus the other bets. Yeah, you know, you're betting like 50% of a stack at that point. So yeah, maybe. I don't know. I just want to get paid off. That's all I care about. So
that's all you want to care about.
That's all right. I care about. But I probably still would have bet $1. But I don't agree with the 260. Hopefully this guy's got a big club and can call.
All right. Well, our opponent goes into the tank.
Oh, that's good. He doesn't have the 7 of clubs then.
After his 15 seconds are up, I love the 15 seconds. That's great. He calls and shows King of Diamonds, King of Clubs.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Wow.
The one card that we were hoping was out there.
Good thing you didn't have the 7 pocket sevens and the 7 of clubs, though. He would have died if he'd re-raised.
Well, I don't know if he would have died. I mean, he would have lost. Yeah, he started the hand with like $5 or 14. Yeah,
14. But the other guy started with 5. So,
$5.
But that was a fun hand. Nice to make a straight flush. Sucks to have the low end of it. But, you know, he made a 6-card straight flush there. That was pretty cool.
Not bad. Yeah, I like it. And he got paid off.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good day at the office, I think. All right, Chris, we appreciate you sending your hand of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we are going to reward you by sending you a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games. I knew I'd flub it at some point.
Six. For six or mixed games.
Yeah. You're going to play with six games. That comes from the good folks at element26.net. That's element26numerals.net. And it's a fairly cheap program, so go there, buy it, have fun, and send your stuff to us. And, you know, we'll send you some J Design cards, PMS Pokerware t-shirts, or a copy of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro.
I'd like to thank our good friend and our Poker Room manager, Jody Russell, for joining us today. A lot of interesting stuff going on the show. I'm glad we mixed it up. They won't know what to expect next week. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Sky Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
I'm good. Hey, you know what? I was just thinking about you guys, and I have an idea for you.
Okay.
Excellent. We like ideas.
You can take it or leave it. It's just something that kind of came to mind a while ago. Because you guys have such a huge following.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps you could get a banter going back and forth about who's the best player between the two of you. And then have like a...
maybe a short conversation.
Have a head...